Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Alan Dinkinson, better known as Dink, in the book and movie Lay the Favorite. Alan's a sports bettor. He's a former bookmaker from Queens, New York. 20-some years ago, the feds shut him down, sent him to almost a year and a halfway house, after which he moved to Vegas and has been on the player side ever since. Alan Dinkinson, Dink, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. Very nice to be here.
Before we actually start asking Dink questions, there's this new system in Las Vegas where these bar owners match up players who own tickets for sporting events to other players who want to buy those tickets. Do you know anything about this, Richard?
Well, just that there was an article in the Sun this week about it. I'm not sure why they would want to match people up. I'm really, really unsure, like, how big the market for that is going to be. It seems like if they wanted to buy them themselves, fine, but to try to match people, I don't know, it just seems like more hassle than it's worth. I mean, I think you could just, if you wanted to provide that service, you could say, come to our bar, we'll buy your ticket, you know, at a discounted rate, and just buy it themselves. I don't know, you know, why they would bother laying it off to somebody. I'll be curious at how the liquidity works out in that market.
Do you have any thoughts on this, Dink?
Yeah, I have a couple. One, you know what the tickets are worth now because the futures are out on these games. So if you have a Kings to win the Stanley Cup ticket at 20-1, you now know it should be 6-1 because that's what the market is giving you. And why do you need this ticket? What if I walked in and go, hey, I want to lay 6-1 on this, on the future on the Kings. Can you find somebody who wants to take the price I want to lay, and we'll give you your percentage, your bookmaker? Why do I have to have this ticket to show them? Look, I took 40-1, so now I want to hedge at 6-1.
But if I have that ticket and I'm willing to take 8-1 to get right. rid of this ticket and to cash this in, and if you could only get 6-1 at the sports book, but could get 8-1 if you went to this. Lay.
But what if I just walked in and said, hey, I want to take 8-1. I don't care if I have a ticket or not. Why, and find somebody who wants to lay 8-1 and then give them the percentage. Just, why do I need that ticket to hedge to make that bet different than a bet?
You'd be called Betfair if you...
Right, but that's, I mean... Yeah. Do I have to really show them how? What if I only bet $10 on this ticket and I want to bet $20,000 at 8-1? Yeah, minus. Who's to say the limits? There's no legalities to this, so who's to say what the rules are?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the bar owners are trying to say what they're doing is legal because they're just buying the existing right. tickets.
It's not even close to like daily fantasy, which I think is a whole different question, and it's kind of a gray area. This is pure. Mark, you know,
book
this
making.
Is a pure, well, exchange betting, which is what it is, because how much do I have to have on this ticket to make it a hedge? Maybe I'm trying to win, you know, what if I only have $10 on this ticket and I want to bet $20,000 on this new bet because I don't like my bet anymore, or I want to bet more even on the Kings that I wish I had more than $10. Can you find somebody who wants to bet against this bet? I don't understand. Is there a gaming authority involved that looks at the ticket before they determine what the hedge is?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never heard of somebody hedging a $10 bet by betting $20,000. Well, but I digress.
Who's to say that you can't just make all these $10 bets in the future so you can make profitable hedges?
All right, let's move on to something else. It's probably this is Dink's first time on this show. It's probably mandatory that we at least talk a little bit about the book and movie Lay the Favorite. The book is autobiographical about a woman, Beth Raymer, and you're her boss some of the time and her friend.
Yes, now I'm just her friend.
And the book and movie gave you 15 minutes of fame of sorts.
2 weeks. That's how long it played in any theater.
Has this been net good or bad for you or neutral?
I guess it's neutral. I don't want that to be my legacy, that somebody wrote a book and they made a movie about the book and I was played by Bruce Willis. It was fun because I was involved in the movie for the first 4 weeks of this eight that they had production. I liked meeting Bruce Willis. He was very cool. We had a dinner and then we talked a lot on the set. That was the best part. It's very disappointing that the movie did so bad, and there was a couple of reasons for that. It was bought and sold to other people, so the owner of the movie did not want to put another penny into it. He already made his profit. He wasn't going to make any more. And it was rushed, and all the people who worked on the film were legitimately hardworking people, but they were in a situation where the movie could not possibly be good.
Right.
I've been there.
Okay.
In the book, Beth Raymer described you when you were growing up. You were basically the smartest kid around.
Yeah, Beth was using a little exaggeration there. I would have had to say that about myself because she wasn't around for that, and I did never say that or never think that. I was in a very tough, educated, tough tested to get into high school, and that's where my gambling roots started. But I was just an average student in a very good school.
How did your gambling roots start in that school?
I ran a little bit of run scored pools. and I was also began my betting career and going to the racetrack when I was still in high school.
All right. Today you're known as a pretty sharp hockey bettor.
Not this year.
Okay.
That's where my reputation for many years has come from. Yes.
Now, what's made this year different?
I'm definitely doing bad. It's gotten much harder. I'm less confident that I can beat the line because I understand where the line is going to go, but the results aren't as clear. Are much more random with the new rules of hockey and the way goalies have grown, one in equipment and two in strategy wise. They're well coached to be in the right positions at the right time. And the difference between goalies is very minimum. It's almost out of the equation of hand. It would be if every pitcher in baseball was exactly the same.
How did that happen? How did the sport change?
Well, the goalie pads grew up a lot. They grew inches, and they're going to come down next year, and I think that will help me a little. The total in the game, which used to be 9 in the Gretzky era, then went to 7 as the common over-under numbers, now 5. At 5, a lot of the goals are scored. Defense blocks a ton of shots. That's something different than the era when I was at my best in betting, which was 20, 25 years ago. It deteriorated slowly where I was a winning player for a long time, but the last 2 or 3 years have been 2 break-even years and this year, which is very poor. Randomly, the 4 years ago was my best year I've ever had. I won over 100 units at 1 unit a shot, and I was betting more than 1 unit a shot. It was an incredible run. But it was randomly lucky, and I knew I was winning a ton of shootouts and overtime games, and the lines got a little sharper since then.
But you mentioned that the coaching has gotten a lot better.
The goalie coaches have been incredibly gifted. Goalies don't flop around. If you look at YouTubes of games in the 1990s, goalies just stand up and try to kick the puck out. That never happens anymore. They're moving to the right way. They're better physically. They can push off better and get from one side of the net to the other. They make saves that they could never have made 25 years ago as the normal.
Yeah, especially because they're only 2 years old 25 years ago.
That was good. I like that. Yes, they were.
Now, we're taping this on Tuesday, March 29th. Tomorrow there are 3 hockey games on tap, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Washington, Philadelphia, and Calgary, Anaheim. The season's 90-some percent over. Will you analyze all three of these games with an eye towards betting them? And if so, how long will that take you?
I'd say 15, 20 minutes a game. I'll relook at injuries. Injuries are the most important in hockey, and keeping records of injuries. I will go back to, you know, looking at what happened in the last 10 games to Washington, who's getting healthier because a key defenseman, John Carlson, has returned in his last game. Philly, the need of Philly winning is paramount for Philly. Washington's already clinched home ice, the Vezina Trophy, is walking into the playoffs, but they've become very flat. These are the factors that make it a little vague at this time of the year to make a line. It's kind of like in all sports when positions and playoffs are kind of known and some teams are fighting for possible playoff positioning. How much do you put into that? It's a tough question. It's not my favorite time of year to bet hockey.
So are your units smaller at this time
of
year?
My units are smaller. My units are smaller because I've been doing poorly. A good gambler will raise his units when he's winning. And, you know, the Kelly criteria somewhat. I do it a little more conservatively. I drop my units quicker than most, and I raise my units a little slower because that's the nature of 2% of my bankroll, because I make a lot of bets looking for good numbers, not even necessarily on a team I like. But if I'm going to flip a coin heads or tails, I'll take plus 0-2 no matter what side I get. So it doesn't have to be, oh, I like the Capitals tomorrow and I hate the Flyers. So I will make those bets because I do have a Matchbook account, and I think that's paramount to any good gambler, is to get an exchange account.
Tell us, I don't know what a Matchbook account is.
Matchbook is an exchange. You offer a price. I want to lay 0-4. Does anybody want to take 0-4? And it costs 1% to make that bet. So you're really working on a 2-cent line, which is, you know, even Pinnacle's 10-cent line, which everybody thinks is incredible, is five times as worse as a Matchbook account.
And they take U.S. players, or do you have to VPN like you're in England or something?
I have to VPN.
Okay.
All right. So maybe we don't want to talk a lot about that.
Right. Okay. Kind of hush us. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. Hopefully nobody's listening to this show. All right. So now, presumably, you make your line, and then you compare it to the books. And if the books are off far enough, you bet. Now, how often does it happen that the games are unbettable?
I'd say about, well, there's also totals on every game, but I'd say about 65 to 70% of the time I will not have a bet on a game, and maybe 5% of the time I'll have a bet on a game that I didn't intend to bet when I saw the opening line. It just moved enough to put me on the side.
All right. Now, you mentioned daily fantasy sports.
Which I didn't do because it's incredibly time-consuming to do that correctly.
So you basically are not into hockey daily fantasy?
I would, if I had 30 minutes for a day in a day, I'd rush out a team just to have fun with it. But I rarely have 30 minutes in a day that I wouldn't want to read something else or read a newspaper or read a blogger about a team. I would much rather do that than try to make one, you know, fantasy thing and shoot for a $1 million prize.
Well, we're honored that you take twice as much time to be here on the show. Now, in hockey, you have the money line and you have over and under line. And those are familiar concepts to anyone who's bet on the far more popular football. But you also have the puck line, which isn't directly comparable.
Which is a lot like baseball with the 1.5 line, the run line. Exactly the same.
Okay, so for those of us who don't bet on baseball, how does the puck line work?
You can bet on a team where you have to win by 2 goals. If you win by 1 goal, you will lose. If you bet on the other side, you have to either win the game or lose by 1 to win your bet. And the VIG is dramatic in hockey because so many games are 1-goal games where you have the inferior team, but you're laying 2-1 to get that 1+1.5 goal. So it becomes like, you know, is this worth it? And to me, because there's a bigger VIG on the 1.5 lines, the puck lines, and a lot of people look at them and Pinnacle deals them, and I always assume that they do it right. There's no rush to bet, you know, it's not like Sharps are taking 1.5 goals or Suckers are laying 1.5 as it used to be with baseball. It's pretty much the lines move only when somebody bets the side. It's not because the empty net in hockey is another total variance related result. And if you're up by one late, you're going to be pulling. If you're up by one late, you're going to have an advantage. Like when the other team pulls their goalie, you'll have you'll have one less man, but you'll have an empty net to shoot at. That's as random as it could get. You know, there's no handicapping which team is good at that or which team is bad at that, and that's going to determine that empty net will determine if somebody wins by two or just by one or the other team ties the game. It's like fouling at the end of the game. In a basketball game, when you're up 8 and you're late 6 and you're hoping they don't hit a 3 and then they'll foul, and then they'll hit another 3, they'll foul. It becomes a total random thing with a point spread. If they're going to will they foul down 8 late in the game? You know, I've lost a game in college where I was up 11 and I was plus 12 and the team fouled with 6 seconds left down 11, intentionally fouled because it was in their mindset to foul until the game is over. They hit both foul shots. I took plus 12. They won by, I lost by 13. It doesn't happen in hockey if you bet the money line. Both you and your bet and the players on the ice are trying to do the same thing and just win the game. That's a big advantage to me.
So you're saying you rarely, if ever,
I almost never bet the puck line. I always assume that they've got it right, and they're charging me more vig to make the bet.
Are there opportunities for on a place like Matchbook where you can adjust?
Yeah, you
that?
Can look at it a little bit and see how it compares to the Pinnacle line and look for it, but it's. And again, I'm bringing all that variance into the game. I know all the totals are 5 or 5.5 under 40 or something. So they're really close to each other. So adding extra randomness to a random sport already is just not what I want to do with my bet. And I feel, you know, I'll never go, oh, this team's going to kill them. They're going to win by at least 2 goals. You're never that confident because when you're up by 1, you're not trying to score. You're trying to protect. And if you are faced with an empty net when you have the extra the lead, you're not looking to score. You're just looking to get the puck out. But if it works out well, you can get the shot at the empty net. It's only for a minute and a half where the goalie gets pulled at the end of the game. So you're basically trying to defend with one man less and get the puck out of the zone so the other team has to regroup. I'm not sure everybody understands what hockey is because it's not that popular a sport. But they're not trying to score to ice the game. They're trying to prevent the other team from scoring. They randomly can score to ice the game. It happens about 30-35% of the time. Unhandicapable which team is good at it, which team will try harder to do it. So it doesn't come into the equation like this team is going to be a good team to take plus 1.5 because they don't empty their goalie at a different time than other teams do. It does matter in the total because some coaches actually will pull the goalie down 3 with like 5 or 6 minutes to go, which is something new as well that never happened 20 years ago. So going over on teams that are dogs where their coaches pull the goalie early might be a little bit of an edge, but I don't know if that's something you can count on, that your team will be down 3 and then the goalie's out and you're down 4 right away.
You briefly mentioned basketball. Basically, basketball and hockey are the same, happen at the same time.
Right. I'm very happy to say I know very little about basketball, so handicapping.
So you specialize in hockey and basically...
Right. I will follow a friend of mine who's extremely good at college basketball. He's very nice to give me his plays if I give him my hockey opinion. He gives me his basketball. If I can get close to the number that he bets it at, I'm willing to bet college basketball. I don't know anything about the game. I rarely watch a game. I will be watching hockey Thursday. Well, I'll be actually at an independent wrestling show in Dallas Thursday and Friday night, so I won't be watching hockey either. But I would never be – I don't care if Villanova wins or not. I have no idea the name of a player on Villanova or North Carolina.
So the because basketball is sucking up all the air on ESPN and all those places, I mean, is that good or bad for you?
It used to be good, but now the line is pretty good. The lines makers are much better. And the game is more random, so sometimes it's like I see mistakes. They make mistakes that you go right away. This line cannot possibly go up. It's going to come down.
How did you?
Like yesterday's Detroit Buffalo line. They made Detroit, who's not playing well at all, much higher than it should. It went from 80, it closed 50, and Detroit won. So it was another one of those games where if you took 60-65 early, you had much the best of it and lost, which has been very common this year. With closing number, beating the closing number and losing has been a correlated parlay.
How did you get so fascinated with hockey to start with?
I lived in New York, and it's a game I gravitated to as a fan. Baseball and hockey. I just liked those games better. And it worked out when I became a gambler at the age of 20. Those were the sports that, to win the bet, you had to win the game. I also like that.
So you also bet a lot of baseball?
I do. I would say I'm an
You're going to be back on this show in another few months.
Okay.
Hopefully.
We'll talk baseball. Sure.
Now, every year back in Boston, there's an MIT Sloan Sports Analytic Conference where various speakers present their ideas on analyzing various sports using mathematics. Is the information there presented useful to the sports bettor? Or does that conference wise up the books to take away some of your edge?
Probably both, but I don't know how many bookmakers send somebody to the analytics. But I can see, paid lines makers doing it. I have a friend who goes to that. It will not help you at all in hockey. It's vital in baseball. There are some tremendous minutia stats that matter in baseball. They change every year. Like WHIP came out, which is a better than ERA, but now WHIP is meaningless because there are much more intricate statistics for pitchers to base your... And I don't do them that carefully. I'm not betting nearly as big in baseball as I am in hockey. Analytics in hockey are in the Stone Ages. They just came out with... It always used to be plus-minus, goals, assists, goalie averages, save percentage, average score for a team, really basic stuff. Now they've added shot attempts, Corsi and Fenwick. Corsi is shot attempts including shots blocked, and Fenwick is shot attempts disregarding shots that are blocked, but they don't have to go on goal. They're just shot attempts. This is a very misleading analytic and will be improved within the next 5 years. It's almost there to confuse you, and you have to realize that shots on goal differ as the score is changing throughout the game. A team that's winning 3-0 going into the third period will almost never outshoot the other team because their whole object is to not give the other team quality shots. And the whole Fenwick and Corsi don't take into consideration quality shots, where the shots are coming from. Obviously, when you see a shot in hockey, if it's from a defenseman far away, it will probably not go in. And if you see a shot 1 foot away from the goalie, and the goalie's on the other side of the net, it will probably go in. And mostly, even though there are some Corsi that has some quality shots in it, it hasn't been well-defined yet. There have been score-adjusted Corsis where the shots are counted when the teams are at even strength or when the score is close. Those are a little bit better than just random Corsis, but it's still misleading, and you have to use the score-adjusted Corsis, and it's still not involving quality shots. So I think that's there to look at, but really it confuses people who are trying to bet because of it.
Can you bet in-game in Vegas?
Not in the sports books, but you can bet offshore. But it's not in-game like basketball. It's only between periods.
Okay.
Which is a 15-minute break. They can't... William Hill is running baskets as they're dribbling the ball. You can bet in-game now. That would be impossible in hockey because... a power play, you'd have to make an adjustment. I don't think there's an algorithm that works for it.
So are there a lot of opportunities for in-play?
They make it at least a 25-cent line, and usually a lot higher than that because, they don't want it to be a tie. So obviously a team that's winning 2-0 will be like a 5-to-1 favorite or more after the first period. So they're using 6-to-1, 380. I don't want to get involved playing all that juice. I figure... How many of them am I going to look at before I find one that goes, oh, this makes sense to me?
Now, surely much of your work in hockey is data-driven. Are there useful data sources that are available either free or
It's not price? As data-driven as you think. It's okay. Most of my hockey is based on injuries and travel, strength of schedule. There's no way you can find that. It's kind of, I'm a pen and paper guy with that. I do my own books. I have my own charts. I haven't found anything that, I mean, there's some really intricate data that is too intricate to make. They're using it to like evaluate players and their talents, but it doesn't really help you with a team evaluation. So I haven't seen too many complicated, well, Washington's in first now and the best team in hockey, but they're playing poorly. That's where they rank and using statistics to do it as opposed to, you know, my own work. I grade every game. I'm like a professor. I give them C's and B's, and I will base it on who they're playing, what the line is, what's the expected result, how the game broke down. And I have a complicated system. Who's injured? It all comes into, but it's really subjective. It's not as data-driven as any other sport, and that's why I like it, because it's very hard for somebody else to think exactly like I do.
A frightening thought.
Yeah. Yes, especially with the way I think about other things in life.
Some books in Vegas allow on-property phone wagering. Is that useful to a bettor?
On-property phone wagering? Do I have apps?
You mean in other words, if you're close enough to the book, you can use apps and phones.
Right, anywhere in Nevada is what close is enough. Yeah, it's anywhere in Nevada, and that's restricted. You can't bet a Buffalo Bills because you're just on the other side of the California border, but you can bet it from Reno. So it's helpful because there are better lines there sometimes. They're a little slower to catch a move. Sometimes you're going to say, I lean to this, and now the line's getting away from me. Let me make a bet at William Hill. But the problem with those is they limit you to nickels, and they spin you around if you're a quality bettor, and they think what side they want to take this, and they look at the line and go, well, he wants to lay 40. There are no 40s left. Let's move the line to 50 and tell him he can't have the bet, which I think should be illegal, because obviously if you were taking the dog, they would let you take 20 in a heartbeat, but they're not letting you lay 40. But, you know, it's still helpful because a lot of times they will. So I make a lot of small bets at those places. And some are better than others, like Westgate is straight up good.
I have to say the thing that drives me crazy is that they separate the horses and the sports. So you have to make two different deposits, one for your sports account, one for your horse account. And the horse account, there's no app. You have to call in on the phone.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you could do all of that.
I thought you were into horses.
I am, but I don't have any need to do it at the Wynn. I mean, it's all the same. They're not giving you better odds.
Well, that's true. Yes.
So I just need an offshore to take a horse back.
Now, speaking of horses, we had Charlie Davis on a couple weeks ago.
Great guy, Charlie.
And he talks about he has computer programs analyzing horse races, and they actually place the bets right as the window's closing. Right. Is there anything similar to that in hockey?
Well, you don't need to place a bet right when the window's closing because your odds are what you bet it at. So it would be like just telling you what the line should be, and then you go out and find the best line that works for you. That's the problem with horses. That makes it so hard. If you want to bet a horse at 4-1 with 2 minutes to post, sometimes it'll go off at 9-5, and you wish you booked him instead of bet him. You know, you really have to wait for the last second, and that's a big edge to the people who have access to bet at the last second and can program a computer to make that. There's nothing like that in sports.
Now, Charlie indicated that you're very good at horse racing tournaments. He spoke to us about tournaments.
He was being nice.
He said you qualified for next year's Nationals already.
I did, without him picking a winner. That was an interesting story.
How do you do that?
A mutual friend of mine and Charlie's named Emily Gullickson was my partner in this one, in a couple of tournaments. And I did everything to make us lose, but she insisted on betting a horse that was 70-1, which I told her, and she understood that you're only getting capped at 20-1. We're not taking, you know, the good thing about it is no one will have this horse, but we're not going to get paid for it. And she said, I said, who's your second choice? And she gave me a 50-1. And I said, well, Emily, if your first choice is 70-1, your second choice is 50-1, we may as well go with your first choice. And it didn't matter to me because there was a 2-5 shot in that race who I thought would win for sure. And so did she, but it was a mandatory contest. You had to pick a horse. So I figured everybody else is going to take the 8-1 and the 12-1 because it's under cap and it's the only horse that probably can beat the
big favorite.
2-5. But I didn't think anybody's going to beat the 2-5, so it didn't matter, and I wasn't going to aggravate Emily. So I took the 70-1 shot, who of course came up the rail with a great trip and won the whole race and made us finish second in the contest. There were 4 seats, so we won a seat. The other horse that we picked was a race that I got busy doing some hockey work, and I said, Emily, this is the one race I have no opinion on. Who do you like? And she said, the 10 paid $24, and that was the enough to carry us to an easy seat in our first attempt at getting a second attempt. We played the Samstown contest the day before.
Now there's a big tournament coming up, the Orleans.
I'll be at WrestleMania.
WrestleMania.
I do have a piece of Charlie, a small piece of Charlie.
Okay. And when is this the one that you've qualified for? When is that?
January.
Okay.
How'd you come to be called Dink? Were you called Dink before the movie came out?
Oh, I was called Dink since the 6th grade. My last name is Dinkinson. My 6th grade teacher called me Dinkinson. I was doing my math homework during class for the next day. And Nathan Bonney, who I still am friendly with, walked up to Mrs. Nahamies, my teacher, and said, Dink is doing his math. And she said, Dink. And I became Dink, or Dinky with a Y, ever since. And other friends, you know, you have a limited amount of friends when you're in 6th grade. So everybody was kind of in my class or in another class of the same grade, and the Dink spread like wildfire.
Well, if you're really a Dinky, you might have even fewer friends.
That's a name that everybody thinks means different things.
I guess it was. Now, we've been told that you hang around MMA fighters.
Hang
these
around
days.
Is a funny word for it. I am friends with, I'm close friends with 2 girls who are fighters, Shayna Baszler and Jessamine Duke. I met them at a wrestling event we both go to in Reseda, California, my favorite place.
Reseda is your favorite place?
I have so much fun. Everybody has fun at this event. It's not like the
WWE. There's a lot of Valley girls there.
Charlie Davis went to this event knowing he would hate it, and he loved it.
Actually, he did say that.
Yeah,
that
it was great. He said he had a blast. I listened. Yeah. It's so much fun. It's just everybody enjoys themselves and contributes to the excitement of the show, and the wrestlers work a little harder and do crazier things. If you're sitting in the front row, it's a little bit dangerous, which is fun, too. At the last show, I got hit by someone's spit that came from the other side of the ring, and a wrestler ducked and it hit me in the shoulder, which I thought was fun because it landed on my shirt. It didn't really, I don't know if it would have been fun if it hit me in the eye, but it was fun. And the wrestler who knew me, like,
most of his scabs have healed. It was probably be okay.
It was fine.
So do you like to go to the MMA events as well?
No, I only go to see my friends fight. I'm not a big MMA fan. I've become acquaintance to a bunch of other people, both male and female, through Shayna and Jess. But I go to support them, and I enjoy it. I don't know how to handicap it. Shayna sometimes gives me some insight on underdogs that she likes, and she's been picking enough winners to make me ahead, but I don't know if she really understands gambling. She just understands, like, well, I think this guy has at least a 50-50 chance to win, and then I'll, you know, look at the odds and go, hey, I can get 2-1. This is a good bet. Or, hey, I can get $1.10. This isn't such a good bet. But that's how I work it with that.
Yeah.
Now, you said goalies are pretty equal these days in hockey, but there seems to be, there are holes. The 1 hole, the 2 hole, the 3 hole, the 4 hole,
yeah.
The 5 hole.
I saw that. I don't think it matters.
Don't think it matters.
I don't think you can. I mean, it matters to the players on ice to, like, you know, keep these shots low on this goalie and keep the shots high on that goalie. It's kind of like, you know, a batter going, oh, this pitcher, you know, don't let him get don't let him bust you inside. He's going to try to bust you inside, protect the inside. So, you know, you can't handicap that in baseball, that so-and-so knows that this bad pitcher is going to pitch him inside because the goalie, you know, it just doesn't, it's too intricate. It doesn't matter to me that, it's not like ground ball, fly ball pitchers, like this is a ground ball pitcher and this team hits ground ball pitchers better. There's no team that shoots better at the five hole. They can put the puck where they want, so they will know where the goalie's weakness is and attack that. Every player on the ice knows this. It's not something that I know that no one else knows, including the line. I mean, everybody knows where the goalie is at his weakest and to shoot it that way. So it's not. It won't help you with your gambling to know that.
Earlier you said the lines are getting better these days. Is that the same thing as saying your competition among bettors are getting better
no,
these days?
It's the opening lines are better. You know, by now, almost every group that bet hockey is out of it. There's maybe one or two people who move the screen now. At the beginning of the season, as in all sports, the lines go crazy. I'm anticipating that for baseball in April, which is a fun time to bet because if you understand line movements, you're almost guaranteed an arbitrage if you want to do that. Or if you just want to bet your unit and take the best of it, you can do that. But again, those are the two sports where the closing line isn't. I mean, if I had a choice of all the closing line sports to bet, it would be college basketball. If I can bet the opening number, college basketball. Although somebody who does all this work and hires people out of Princeton said the best opening line to bet into is golf. Golf matchups over the last 5 years have won the most money per unit than any other sport. Huh. If you can bet the opening number.
Huh. Well, I mean, it's the opening number. I mean,
well, you have to know what when you see a move from $1.20 to $1.80, you will chart your bet at $1.20. Just like in baseball, when you see a move from $1.20 to $1.40, you chart your bet at $1.20. Hockey has been the least productive of all of those bets, and golf has been the most productive of all of those bets. So you're not able to do that, per se. You have to know where the line's going or know where the move is going to be, or you're the originator. So the originators in golf do better than the originators in any other sport.
Huh.
And I trust the guy's data and his work, but I haven't seen it myself. But I would bet high that that statement is accurate. And the guys he hired have a way to attack every single sport where they think they have the best of it, except hockey. They could not find by backtesting anything in hockey that works.
Which is good for you because you don't need more competition.
Yeah, that's because basically you're not writing injuries. You're not looking at injuries and trying to understand how they'll change the team's strength or weaknesses. And travel, which is I'm sure they looked at, but the injuries are very important. And teams in October and teams in the end of March are so different than they, you know, over that course of the season, that seasonal stats mean nothing. It's really recency that means everything.
Now, in hockey, it's often that when they substitute players, they'll substitute an entire line of maybe three guys all at once.
Three up front and two in the back of pairs. They only skate for about a minute in the forwards and the center, and maybe a minute and a half the defensemen before, if an opportunity comes to get off the ice, they'll get off the ice and bring in a fresh line.
But in basketball, they don't do that at all.
You can't substitute on the fly. You have to wait for a timeout. In hockey, you substitute on the fly.
Now, is that... So would injuries to a line?
Injuries will change. Injuries to the first line can move a guy up from the second line, can move a guy from the third line to the second line, and just create all this anti-chemistry that you've developed with your line mates.
So injuries in hockey are more important than they are in most other games?
Losing your best hockey player might not be as important as losing your best basketball player who's scoring 30 points a game, because there are still 12 guys who play in the forward positions. And, you know, one guy will not cost you that amount percentage of scoring, but it will disrupt the chemistry. And it's just not if Why am I thinking? All right, if LeBron James is out, you know that's worth 6 or 7 points.
At least, yeah.
Maybe less, because I remember I had access to some of the better handicappers' numbers in the 90s, and you'd be surprised, like, you know, the best players were worth, Jordan was only worth like 5.5 points, and other people were worth 3. Because the substitute will now play 48 minutes, and you can't say, oh, the substitute only averages 6 points, and he's going to average a lot more playing the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out LeBron, suddenly people who could have the ability to score a lot more points, but if LeBron's in the game, they won't because they're giving it to LeBron. You know what I mean?
All these new shots are going to be launched by other players who won't shoot that much when he's playing. So I found that startling when I first saw it, and then I thought about it, and just like you stated, other players will step up and score the extra points. A team's not going to score 100 with LeBron and 70 without him. They're going to score 92 without him, but those 8 points are vital. That's 8 points, you know, against the spread. So what's he worth against the other team as opposed to how many points? He can't be worth 15 points, you know, even though he averages 30 points. And the backup averages 6. He doesn't, you know, it's only worth like 5 or 6 points to the final score. That's hard. It's a tough concept. In hockey, you can't say he's worth half a goal. There's no player worth half a goal. That's a tremendous percentage of the 2.5 you're supposed to score in each
game. Not even a goalie.
All goalies are totally overrated. They're all the same. They all save 9.915 or so. The best goalie is whoever wins the Stanley Cup. You know, why would he play good? You know, Quick is the best goalie. Well, Quick in his last 3 or 4 games for the Kings has been awful. And tonight and tomorrow he might be the best goalie again. It's kind of, some shots are unstoppable and some shots bang off 2 people in front of you and go in. In the long run, almost every goalie has a similar save percentage. The guy who has the best save percentage this year, who's played about 25 games, is the Flyer backup goalie. And the Flyer backup goalie is just only a little bit better than the Flyer number one goalie. Yet the Flyers are struggling to make the playoffs. And they arguably have the 2 best save percentage goalies in hockey. That's because they give up a lot of shots. That's,
I guess they
one
would.
Of the reasons.
Now, I know basketball isn't your sport, but in basketball, sometimes the coaches just mail it in. For example, the second best team in the NBA,
the Spurs, continually.
Is the Spurs.
Yeah.
Sometimes the coach will rest all 5 starters for the whole game, and you don't know that that's coming. You don't know when it's going to come. But so, like, when they play the Warriors next week, it's like you don't know which Spurs team is
coming. Oh, I'm sure their whole team will play that game, but they might not play.
Not sure, because they're going to meet in the 3rd round of the playoffs, and they may not want to tip stuff.
Yeah, but they want to break that record. They would, you know, the Spurs have an unbelievable streak, too, at home.
At home, but right. One of those games is at...
But they would love to break the Warriors' streak before the playoffs start and have the Warriors doubt
okay.
that they could...
Well,
that's just my opinion. They've rested players in the last 2 games, the Spurs. Usually it's known before the lines come out, or they know that it might happen and they're withholding the line until they find out who's playing on the Spurs.
Does that happen in hockey, too, where they sit out players
very rarely will they sit people out and mess up the chemistry. But what happens in hockey is the work ethic of a team may get complacent when they're either out of the playoff picture or firmly entrenched in a certain position, and they're not going into the corners where it's a little more dangerous, where you can get hit into the boards. They're playing a simpler game, and they don't really need to win, but they really need to not get hurt. So many players in hockey are playing hurt. People
yes.
played, you know, after the series last year, 2 or 3 people were playing with broken legs that came out after the series ended. I mean, hockey and wrestlers are the people who play through injuries like nobody else.
Like, that's sick.
Concussions. Nobody ever took off of hockey until recently for a concussion. It was nothing. Just played through it.
Yeah, just shake it off. Rub dirt on it. Yeah. But like last night, the Lakers, who were probably the second worst team in basketball, but they lost by 48 points. And, you know, it's like they just basically didn't show up.
Right.
And does that happen? I mean, it's like I was amazed.
You rarely lose 6-0 no matter what in a hockey game. And even when you lose 6-0, you might have gotten more shots than the other team. But you can see that you're not working as hard as you would. You know, Vancouver's kind of mailed it in. They have a lot of veterans. They're just not going into the corners and risking somebody coming and breaking their skull or something. It's so they're playing a basic game and trying to win that way, and they usually don't win. But they can still make the games competitive by just being defensively responsible. But they're not going into doing the dirty work. Good players like Sidney Crosby still need players to get them the puck. They're not going into the corners to get the puck, so they need to be surrounded by good players. When those good players who are not the goal scorers become complacent and don't want to go in and do the dirty work because of the situation and the standings, you know, coaches don't care that they lose games that don't matter. They just don't want anybody hurt for the playoffs now. The less it's 10 more days of hockey.
Yeah,
they'll be devastating if a playoff team loses a key player now.
You mentioned that this is not the best time to be betting hockey. When is the best time?
I'd say after the
last
first
year.
2 weeks.
Yeah. 4 years ago.
4 years ago was
the
best time. Yeah. But it wasn't because they were bad. It was because I'm still beating the closing number, and I guess that's the way. I mean, you're an advantage player show. I guess that's the way you determine advantage. If I flipped a coin and you gave me 05 and I lost, I had the advantage.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And that's easy to know because the probability of that coin flip is easy to determine. Who's to say that beating the closing line meant that you have the best of it? Because maybe that whoever bet to move the line that way was wrong or just randomly following people, and this snowball effect could occur. It doesn't occur anymore because no one is – I don't think any groups are beating hockey at all. The total bettors stopped betting totals a long time ago, and it's pretty much just the side bettors who are still betting. And I have to think that this year the variance has hurt me the most because I'm just doing fine beating the closing line.
Okay, you bet 4 years ago, and you say randomly it was the best year of your life, and now you say you're losing. Is there to what extent do you think? Well, randomly you're having a bad year.
I think I'm randomly having a bad year. I think I beat the closing number about the same then as now.
So,
I don't think the lines were that much worse. I just was winning a lot of 2-1 games, you know,
okay.
And now I'm losing a lot of 2-1 games. And, you know, I read a lot of stuff, and there's sometimes I just roll my eyes at how many days in a row a coach will say, you know, we were lucky we escaped with 2 points. And obviously I would have the other team. But it's just been one of those seasons. I'm, you know, frustrated for sure, and my betting is lower because I think there's some of it is because I'm not making good decisions. It's not all variance, but against the closing number, I'm doing fine, and that's the way I judge my bets. And this is the long, you know, the square wise guy argument is, who cares if you're beating the closing number? Who cares if you laid 3 in football and the game closed pick 'em? As long as you won, you did the right thing. And, you know, I want to be taking 11-10 against the guy who's laying 3 on games that closed pick 'em. That's the way I see it. I still have a bookmaker's mentality. You know, if I was dealing a line of, you know, half flat and somebody was betting me a half flat and the line closed a half flat, I don't care if he wins 8 bets in a row. It's just, you know, he can lose 8 bets in a row. In the long run, he's supposed to go 4-4 and pay me the VIG. And now I'm trying to get the VIG on my side. That's all.
All right. We're talking to Alan Dankinson, hockey bettor. We have one more question for Alan that Richard's going to devise in the next 3 minutes while I talk about our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Big promotion in March, going for 2 more days. $600,000 March Money Madness. It continues through this Thursday. Beginning this Thursday at 9 p.m., you can start earning virtual entries into the $600,000 April Showers giveaway. Every night, April 1st to April 30th, 8:15 p.m., one person's name will be called for $10,000 cash, which must be claimed in 4 minutes, or the prize resorts to $500 in free play, and another name is called. Eventually, they'll get one $10,000 cash winners and 20 $500 free play winners. You do not have to physically show ID to claim the $500 free play prizes. You simply play it off in 7 days or it evaporates. There's a maximum of 10,000 tickets to to be earned each day between 9 p.m. the night before and 8 p.m. of the current day. Video poker players earn one ticket per dollar coin in. Slot players earn three tickets per dollar coin in. The virtual barrel is emptied after every drawing. Free video poker class tomorrow, March 30th, will be the last class in the semester, namely, what video poker players should know about slot clubs. Knowing the ins and outs of slot clubs is every bit as important to successful video poker players as the selection of machines and the play of the hands. In the class, a framework will be given to help you decide which is the best place for you. At the Palms, from now until the end of April, they have drawings every Friday and Saturday night, 7:15 p.m. must be present to win. Five winners share $5,000, plus they each get a chance to win $1 million in the $1 million match game. Odds on the match game are about 16,500 against you, 500 to 1 against you. PFP, play for prizes. Until April 15th, you earn Walgreens gift cards. Cards are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep the points. For the following 2 weeks, you can earn gift cards to Kohl's at the same rate. That's K-O-H-L apostrophe S. For two more days in April, it's free play that you're getting on the PFP. There is one remaining multiplier day this month. It's tomorrow, Wednesday, March 30th. Video poker players receive a minimum and maximum of two times with a maximum bonus of 40,000 points, and you do get the extra free play with that as well. In April, every Sunday and two Wednesdays, the 13th and 27th, you earn double points for video poker. The Wednesday multiplier tomorrow earns you the play for points prizes. The Sunday multipliers do not. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is 100 play draw poker. 100 play is very much like triple play, 5 play, 10 play, except in most jurisdictions you can play any number of hands at full credit. That is, if you only want to play two hands, you can and still get 800 for one for the royal flush. Does not require any special strategy to play. You use the same strategy as you would for playing a single line game with the same pay schedule. All right, Richard, we got about a minute and a half left. What final question?
Well, I had a question, but actually I want to give Dink a chance to plug his own show. He has.
I want to plug a charity that I represent.
Oh, yes.
Southern California Thoroughbred Rescue, sctbrescue.org. They save racehorses from slaughter and get them adopted and give them a second chance, and they do a wonderful job. I post on my Twitter account plays for the rescue. I do not post for profit. I'd rather plug that than the EOG radio show, which I am a co-host on it every Tuesday night at 10 p.m.
So that's tonight at 10, and what's the station?
KSHP.
Is that
1400
a.m. Okay. So we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered automatically to you every week at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. Or for an archive of all of the old shows, you can find those at bobdancer.com.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Alan Dankinson. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.